Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, the day after the election of 2012. It's Wednesday, November the 7th. We're live weekdays, noon to 1 on the home of the Buckmaster Show, AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We're streaming live at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com, and you can hear the program after we post it, usually by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, to buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, tucsonsentinel.com, and there are links to the show on the homepage of the Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun, gvnews.com, and now a link on Blog for Arizona. That's blogforarizona.com. We devote the entire hour, no surprise there, to breaking down the results of yesterday's vote. With me in studio, Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer for the Arizona Daily Star, and Mark B. Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com. Owned by the Gannett Corporation, TucsonCitizen.com is a community of bloggers. Our live line number is 790-2040. Sarah and Mark, it's finally over.
Yes.
Sort of.
Well, sort of. We're still counting votes in some key races, including the Martha McSally-Ron Barber race. And I think that's kind of – well, I have two surprises of the day in Arizona, and you each can weigh in whether you agree with me or not. I think Carmona Flake, I was shocked that was not a real close race.
Well, the polling that we saw coming into Election Day – had it much, much closer. And so I think I was not surprised that Pima County went for Richard Carmona. The thing that was going to – I actually would have been surprised if he had been able to pull it out statewide, even with the polls.
It's very hard for a Democrat from Tucson to pull out a statewide race.
Absolutely. So I think it's the kind of thing that you got to really understand polls to know what people are asking, know what questions people are answering, and to figure out what it really means come Election Day.
And Mark Evans, my other surprise, speaking of polls, that Ron Barber and McSally, Colonel McSally, so close, with McSally right now with the lead.
Right, and the part of the problem, I think, with that race is there weren't a lot of public polls on that. There were internal polls, but neither of the candidates were releasing them, so we weren't really sure how close that was. But the expectation was that Barber had just won pretty much that same district. District 2 is a little different than District 8, but not significantly different, although it's much closer aligned Democrats-Republicans than District 8 had been. So, but, I mean, the guy just won. So I think the conventional wisdom was that he was going to win. And when the early ballots came in, he had a pretty good lead. He had probably a 5 or 6 point lead. But as the Election Day numbers started coming in, precinct by precinct, McSally kept creeping up on him, and she managed to catch him by the end of the night. Now, there's still a lot of ballots still to be counted in Pima County. It's probably more than 20,000 or
it's
more.
It's 80,000.
It's up to 80,000. Wow.
80,000.
So we don't know how many.
That's wow. The latest figures that we have. It's 40,000 early ballots and 40,000 provisional ballots have yet to be counted, according to Becky Palak of the Arizona Daily Star, and that's she's quoting recorder F. Ann Rodriguez.
Now, we don't know how many of those are CD2 votes. I mean, some of them are going to be CD2 votes. You know, that's a huge provisional ballot number, and that showed there was something wrong over with the county's registrar of voters. When they consolidated, I think I heard earlier this morning that they had printed out the voting rolls that they were used at the polling places before the final registration deadline, and I think that led to a lot of people not being on the list. And that led to so many provisional ballots. So it's going to be Saturday or probably even early next week for some of these really close races before we know who actually won.
And we also had a thing on StarNet saying that both McSally and Barber had agreed to just sort of wait it out until the final results are in, because it is razor thin.
Yeah, she's up by 1,300 right now, and still all the precincts haven't been counted officially from last night. They stopped counting last night at Pima County.
Okay, so what's the deal with all the provisional ballots this year? Some mix-ups at the polls yesterday,
well,
Sarah?
Provisional ballots are only supposed to be cast very rarely. And they're supposed to be kind of a safeguard where you show up at your polling place and you're for some reason not on the list. Or you are they have you as having requested an early ballot, but you said it never got to you. So it's only supposed – it's cast at the polling place and it's supposed to be kind of a fail-safe where the – election folks at the county then go and check your signature. They make sure that you're actually registered where you say where you're supposed to be, and that they verify that everything is that you're you and that you haven't voted twice. But with what I've been a poll worker a couple times, and what this giant number says to me is that people did not know how to handle the problems that were happening at the polls with, I guess, people going to the wrong place or not being on the list. And so they teach you, when in doubt, hand the person a provisional ballot and it'll get sorted out later. But this is just 40,000. That's like Arizona Stadium almost. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Well,
part of the problem was the consolidation of voting areas. There were 417-something voting areas in most of the last 10 years or 12 years of elections, and they consolidated them because of the huge numbers of early ballots. They consolidated them this year to 288. So a lot of voters are having to go someplace else to vote. I'll give you an anecdotal example of what happened to me when I went to vote yesterday morning. There was an old man standing in front of me. He had that yellow card that said where he was supposed to go vote. He went up to the table, and they didn't have his name there. They showed him on the yellow card, no, now you're supposed to go to this other place. And he said, yeah, but I've been voting here for 10 years. I've always voted here. I thought the card was wrong. And so there's some of that that was going on. A lot of confusion amongst voters where they're supposed to go.
State Representative Steve Farley, a Democrat, will be going on to the Senate, beating Tyler Mott, the Republican. Farley, 56%. Mr. Mott, 44%. Steve is with us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Congratulations, Steve Farley.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it, Bill.
What do you think turned the tide for you?
I think people are really tired of extremism in Arizona in the legislature, and they realized that I was the person, actually the moderate in the race, who has a track record in actually creating jobs, not just talking about it. My support for education is important to people. And I'm just really grateful that the folks in the new district were really paying attention and seeing the real differences amongst the candidates and decided that I was the person they would like to have represent them. I'm very humbled by that.
Here is Sarah Garrett-Gasson, Steve, from the Arizona Daily Star.
Steve, I wondered if you could, since you've been in the legislature for a while now, you're very active in the Democratic Party. The statewide, what does it look like in terms of, I know the Democrats picked up a couple seats. What does that picture look like in terms of the really hardcore to the right Republicans and the new incoming Democrats?
Well, I'm very hopeful that this means that we are ending the extremism we've seen over the last 2 years in Arizona. We in the Senate, we picked up 4 seats. So instead of a 21-9 super ideological majority, we now have a 17-13 majority still for Republicans, but it's going to be that much closer so that the majority is going to have to talk with us. We're going to have to negotiate things that are coming up, and it's a great time to do that, as ultimately whether or not we expand our Medicaid, our access program, back to cover all people in poverty like Prop 204 required us to in 2000, that's going to be decided as we enter into our new healthcare exchanges. We're going to decide how that's going to work. We need to figure out a way of funding our schools so our kids don't fall off the cliff in May when the sales tax expires. There's a lot of these mainstream moderate things that we could be working on together to create bipartisan solutions on, and we needed a much closer legislature to make it happen. In the House, it's 35-25, so that's closer than the 40-20 as well. So we'll be able to get some stuff done. I think, interestingly enough, we may end up working pretty closely with the governor's office to get some stuff through.
Here is Mark Evans, Steve, from TucsonCitizen.com.
In terms of that education funding that you just mentioned, how do you think that debate's going to go next year at the legislature? I mean, not only do you have the temporary sales tax going to expire, you have the tax cuts that were approved in the last couple of sessions start to go into effect, so you got a kind of a double whammy there. And you still have the prohibition on or not prohibition, but the limitation on trying to raise a tax because you need two-thirds of a vote to get out of the legislature. So it's not like you're going to be up there raising taxes to get more money to education. So how are you going to solve that education conundrum? And is it possible to solve considering that you still don't have the majority in either house?
Well, the last couple of years we've had people in power in both House and Senate who were less interested in helping save public education and more interested in privatizing the entire system. That is not the case anymore. There are still folks there who believe that, but I think there is a majority of folks who understand that public schools are the basis of our economy and the basis of our middle class, and we're going to need to support them. What I'm pushing personally, and I think we hopefully will get some broad bipartisan support for, is rather than raising taxes, we can eliminate some of the more than $10 billion in sales tax loopholes that are in our sales tax code. Those special interest corporations have gotten this in place over the course of decades. That gives away $10 billion of funds that are already coming in. If we are able to successfully do this in a bipartisan way and basically stand up to the lobbyists, we can reduce our overall tax rate while increasing the amount of revenues we have available to actually pay for our schools. That seems to me to be the ideal solution, and that's my number one goal when I go back to the Senate, is we are going to deal with that loophole problem once and for all.
Steve Farley, thank you very much. Senator to be in Arizona. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Coming up now on 1216 on Buckmaster, we will look at the Pima County Supervisors race as we continue with the Buckmaster Show. Next up, the people who support this program, please support them.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Finding the perfect Tucson rental home is now easy thanks to Tucson Rental Homes, which offer high-quality 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom luxury rental homes with private gated yards in a classic Santa Fe-style architecture. Designed, built, and managed by Tucson Rental Homes, prices start at just $750 a month. Check out our many homes now available at TucsonRentalHomes.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
The Rug Gallery is celebrating its 25th anniversary jubilee celebration with a colossal tent sale, offering up to 75% off at La Encantada Shopping Center at Campbell and Skyline in Tucson. With over 2,000 hand-woven imported rugs from around the globe, the Rug Gallery has rugs just right for your home or the largest palace. With an international reputation, the Rug Gallery has graced the cover of Christie's magazine and is featured in many other high-end and publications. Stop by and check out the Rug Gallery with Arizona's largest in-stock inventory of fine, high-quality, hand-woven, imported rugs during the colossal tent sale with up to 75% off at Tucson's La Encantada Shopping Center in the foothills of the Catalinas. Or visit the Rug Gallery online at ruggalleryaz.com/sale or call 571-RUGS. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 6 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, La Cañada from Ina to River, and Phase 2 of Saharita Road. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Well, 20 on the Buckmaster Show, and we are rocking and rolling the day after the election. This portion of Buckmaster comes from the support from Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community for adults 55 and better. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Well, the Pima County Board of Supervisors will have its first new member since 2003, Republican Ellie Miller, defeating Democrat Nancy Young Wright to grab that open seat in District 1, long held by retiring Republican Supervisor Ann Day. So joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias, who easily won his election, defeating first-time candidate Republican Fernando Gonzalez. Richard garnered 73% to about 27% for Mr. Gonzalez. Richard, how are you today, and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Bill, and I appreciate it. Feeling good today.
I bet you are. Richard, I am with Sarah Garrett-Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star and Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. Before I give Sarah and Mark their chance to ask a question, just a quick one for you. The incumbents were portrayed in a lot of the advertising, which got very nasty, as kind of being a do-nothing board that tries to hold back business in this community. Some of your thoughts.
Well, I think we proved that that was a bunch of baloney in the view of many of the voters. In fact, we're a board that's showed great fiscal restraint and bucked the national trend of going broke as a local government. And I think that shows that we have good business sense. And we've also helped to create a lot of jobs and help businesses with the bond money that we've had to spend in a very difficult period.
Here's Mark Evans now, Richard.
Hi, Supervisor. Last week there were a couple of economic forums, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, that talked about the economic recovery in Arizona and partly in Pima County. And they said that the recovery has been slow in Pima County, is going to continue to be slow in Pima County because of our reliance on home construction, and it's going to take a while for that to come back here, which raises the question of diversifying the local economy. And that was some of the complaints of some of the Republican opponents. What can we look forward to in the next 4 years in trying to get us off this housing train and getting a more diversified economy here?
Well, I really think that's the ticket. You're right, Mark, and that is what we need to do, is rebuild this economy. I think there's a lot of different facets that we see growing. The biosciences area seems to be a place where there's some good-paying jobs out there that have been coming to Pima County and Tucson. I think we need to look for ecotourism because of the fact that we've done a job of conserving the beautiful place we live. Great opportunities for entrepreneurship as we bring more people in as tourists to Tucson and Pima County. And the other thing, I think, is restoring professional sports in the area. We've got a good chance to corner the market on MLS and spring training to help us replace those dollars that went to Phoenix along with our baseball clubs.
Here's Sarah Garrett-Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, Richard Elias.
Good afternoon, Sarah.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I wanted to ask about what we were talking about earlier, about all these provisional ballots that are still hanging out there, and the problems at the polls that were reported throughout yesterday. We have 40,000 early ballots and 40,000 provisional ballots that have yet to be counted. As someone in county government and as an elected official yourself, what's your take on that, and why can't Pima County get its act together when it comes to elections?
Well, I think we do have our act together when it comes to elections. I think that we're still adjusting to mail balloting as both the population and as government as well. So we saw some glitches that came out this time in huge numbers, and that needs to be fixed, and we need to look into it closely and make sure that our procedures are in line with the fact that a lot of folks apparently don't send in their mail-in ballots, but rather drop them off. We have a huge number of ballots that were dropped off at the polls, 40,000. That's a big number that causes us a lot of problems in trying to count to get those caught back up. The provisionals and conditional provisional ballots take a lot more time to process because, obviously, there's either conditions on those ballots or we have to do more than just verify signatures. So it's a problem for us, but it's also a problem with the public getting more used to voting by mail because it's not quite there all the way.
And I should say that if you're out there listening and you've moved, please do remember to update your voter registration. I wanted to also ask about the Allie Miller and Nancy Young Wright race. What your thoughts are on that? Is that a function of the district where the votes were cast, the nature of the district, that was just going to be a Republican-leaning group of people anyway? Or is it something else that you're sensing from this?
Oh, absolutely. I think Nancy Young Wright ran a great race and tried her best. But, you know, there's a 30,000 vote advantage there for Republicans in registration. So a pretty tough district to win for a D. We certainly have to welcome Allie Miller to the Board of Supervisors.
Do you have like a party, or how does that work?
They have a mixer.
Baptism by fire.
You have a mixer. Yeah. By the way, Allie Miller is scheduled, hopefully, to be with us at the top of the show on Thursday. We've invited her to be on next Thursday's show. Mark, a quick question.
So part of the American electoral process is it's adversarial, and people who are trying to beat incumbents have to say, everything's bad and it won't be good unless I get elected. And that was what we were getting about a lot of the Republican races running against the supervisors and in some of the races for the elected officials like the sheriff and the like. But it's a status quo election. All the incumbents won. What does that say about the county and how the voters feel about county leadership?
I think people are pretty satisfied with county leadership. They've seen, once again, that we've done a good job of managing money and keeping ourselves above water. Without increasing taxes. In fact, while we've been taking in less tax money. So I think people are pretty satisfied. I think Clarence Dubnyk has had a great career and is a great sheriff, and people recognize that. Mark Napier, good guy, came close, but not quite. He's not going to be Clarence. I respect Mark very much, having worked with him on the South Side for years. But people are satisfied with the leadership, I think, that's in place at Pima County, and I'm pleased by that.
Oh, go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to ask about the changing face of the legislature. If you think, given the budget situation with the county and the state legislature and HERF funds and all the rest, I know it's early, but do you get any sense of if that is going to make a difference on the whole pushing the expenses down to the local governments?
Richard, I've got about 40 seconds for you, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. What I would say is that, you know, we need to change some more faces, but the fact that we have some of the more extreme voices out of the legislature is going to help us all do better by the taxpayers make sure money gets down here to Pima County that should. Well, that's a very difficult issue, but we can start to work on it without being so shrill. Also, I just pray and hope that the new legislature does a better job of taking care of our kids and our elders, because they're the ones who are really so vulnerable.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Richard Elias. Have a great day. Thanks a lot, and congratulations on your big victory. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
A lot. Coming up now on 12:30 on The Buckmaster Show, we have heard from Steve Farley and we have heard from Richard Elias, both Democrats. But during the next half hour, we will hear from Mr. Republican himself, Bruce Ash, who is the chair, national chair, or not, yeah, he's the national committeeman for the Republican Party in Arizona. Of course, I know that. Bruce is going to come up in the next half hour. So stay with us on the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. There will be no fiscal honeymoon for President Obama. That's the word from credit rating agency Fitch. It says the president must quickly reach an agreement with Congress to prevent a series of tax hikes and spending cuts that kick in at the start of the new year, the so-called fiscal cliff. Mitt Romney's running mate Paul Ryan says that he'll be returning to Congress after he spends some time with his family. There are reports of damage and at least one death following a powerful earthquake off the Pacific coast of Guatemala. This morning's 7.5 quake rocked the Guatemalan capital and shook buildings as far away as Mexico City and El Salvador. Wall Street, the Dow down 265 points at 12,982. The NASDAQ off 69. More details at srnnews.com.
If you love antiques like I do, I strongly suggest a visit to Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have a fantastic selection of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. That's 325-9439.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
My name is Mark Layton, and I'm the IT guy over at O'Neill Printing. In order to serve my Tucson clients, I've got to be able to quickly receive files up to 10 gigs in size. That's why we made the switch to Cox Business. We used to have an internet connection that could barely handle more than two file uploads at a time. With Cox Business, our connection is 10 times faster, and our bill is 40% less. Now that's what I call a no-brainer.
Get to know the business side of Cox at CoxBusinessAZ.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
.34 now on the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program brought to you by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It is a great time of year over in Silver City, the autumn. Just 3.5 hours east of Tucson to historic Silver City. They have a great arts community. Their downtown has been restored and is lovely. There's a lot to do over there. Great accommodations in Silver City, including the Continental, let's see, we have Continental Divide RV Park, we have Little Toad Creek Inn, Pinos Altos Cabins, on and on. A lot of great places to stay. And coming up December 8th, do you like tamales? I'm sure you do. The New Mexico Tamale Fiesta in historic downtown Silver City. We continue on dissecting and breaking down election 2012 here in Southern Arizona. Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer with the Arizona Daily Star, is with me, and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. At the beginning of the program, Sarah and Mark, I said I had noticed a couple of surprises. I thought the Flake Carmona race would be much closer. I thought Ron Barber would have fairly comfortable lead. But there is a third surprise that, Mark, you reminded me of during the break. And, of course, this is a surprise, how close Proposition 409, the City of Tucson roads measure, is right now.
Right. So the city's looking for $100 million over 5 years to fix the poor state of its roads because it doesn't have any other money to do it except to do annual maintenance. This was a one where the voters had to have some sort of confidence in the city that they were actually going to use this money well. The city's been beleaguered by bad press the last couple of years, Rio Nuevo and so forth. So my expectation was, again, absent any local polling, was that this was either going to win by a few points or was going to lose big. 50-50 caught me by surprise. Now, again, it's only 1,000 vote difference, so we're not going to know until all those uncounted ballots are finished. But right now it's losing by just a 1% or like 0.9%.
And Sean McCluskey, who led the charge against this, put some of his own money into it, had been saying this one was going to be a no-brainer. It was simply going to be defeated very easily.
Right, and mostly because of the city's reputation. And he was making arguments that there was money in the budget that could be used to fix this, and that we didn't have to go and borrow money and raise property taxes. And the city countered with, you know, we've cut everything that we can. We can find money, but we got to start closing parks, laying off firefighters and things like that. And nobody really wants that. So if it loses, you're still going to have bad roads that aren't going to be fixed. We're going to have to find some way to do it. If it wins, we're going to have a 5-year reprieve, but we still have a 10-year problem. So it's only a part solution. So.
And kudos to you, Sarah, and the staff. Really, you worked so hard putting the editorial board, interviewing so many candidates. And as I recall, 409 was one that you were urging voters to vote yes on. Is that correct?
That is correct. And thank you, Bill, for that's a very kind thing for you to say. The editorial board of the Star did endorse 409, kind of along the lines of what else are we going to do? You know, we don't really have another choice. There isn't the money in the budget to do it. So I agree with Mark, though. I thought it was either going to win by a bit or just lose big time, because the city's campaign was basically – we understand that you don't trust us, and that's okay because we've constructed this in such a way that we're not really having anything to do with it. So I'm surprised that it's that close.
And the voters were in a no mood yesterday. I mean, they voted no on most of the school election, or all the school bond budget overrides and the bond elections. They voted no on most of the propositions. They voted no on Prop 204, which was the money for schools.
Voted no on a couple of the incumbents on the TUSD board, and I think at least one incumbent on the Pima Community College Board.
Right, there's definitely going to be a new member of the Pima Community College. So voters were in a feisty mood yesterday, and so to have this to be at really dead even right now is a little surprising. I think people get it. I think they get that what a choice do we have.
And the propositions that had gotten the most attention, the open primary, that's not going to change.
I was disappointed in that one.
You were hoping for that, and the sales tax for education, extending that after the current one sunsets in May, goes down 2-1. I was a little surprised by that margin.
I was surprised by that, too. The people that we talked to just in the course of reporting and doing our jobs and just, you know, friends and family and that sort of thing, people seem to say, well, it's not a great bill, but what else are we going to do? So that kind of, and I guess extending the 1 cent sales tax, isn't what people wanted to do. And I think the problem came down not so much in the extension of the actual sales tax, but in the fact that it was permanent and that you had to do another vote to undo it, basically. I think people don't like things, even the voters approve, that kind of tie your hands years down the road. And to me, I think that was its undoing. I mean, I personally voted for it. We endorsed it at the Star, but I think people just kind of had qualms.
And I don't think that the people who opposed it should take too much, read too much into it, that voters don't want more money for education. The polls all show that voters want more money for education. I just think there was a bad bill that was put up. I think the solution is we're going to have a governor election in 2 years and another election for the legislature, and the Andy Peterson organization, which names
Arizona Education Network
for Quality Education,
right, and the Arizona Education Association, and all those teachers and all those parents that went out there and really worked hard and raised a lot of money, fought off the dark money that came into this late. If they put that same effort in a couple of years, then they might get the relief to education funding that they've been asking for.
And we haven't talked about CD1 and Kirkpatrick, the Flagstaff Democrat. When I went to bed last night, very late, Republican from Marana, Jonathan Payton, had a lead. And then I woke up this morning and Ann Kirkpatrick was in the lead. We haven't had a chance to talk about that. Maybe we'll bring that up with Bruce Ash when we bring in Bruce after the break. So stay with us on the Buckmaster Show. We are deconstructing election 2012 here. Stay with us.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Now in its seventh year, the RTA has finished over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Current projects include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson and Grant Road at Oracle. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. With ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service, providing jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer, the RTA is delivering our promise to you.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show at 12:46, and joining us now, joining Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star and Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, is Bruce Ash, National Republic. A national committeeman for the Republican Party in Arizona. Bruce, kind of a tough day for Republicans, certainly on the national level. Republicans didn't seem to see this coming, did they?
Well, I didn't.
What happened?
Well, I think probably the October surprise that occurred was Superstorm Sandy. And it really was, because the president had an opportunity to look presidential and then go off and campaign. But the image that most voters will remember from the storm was him getting off the plane in Atlantic City and putting his arm around Governor Christie. And that might be the most persuasive last image of this presidential campaign.
Sarah Garrett Gasson.
I wanted to ask about locally in Congressional District 2. I know it's neck and neck with Martha McSally and Ron Barber. I know that the Democrats usually meet at one hotel. The Republicans meet at another hotel ballroom. But Colonel McSally had her own gathering last night. What does that say about her I don't know.
Being a team player?
Well, connection to the local Republican Party. Coming from the primary with the special election in District 8, the feeling wasn't exactly that she's on board. So I guess, what do you think about that?
Oh, actually, I think that it's reminiscent of Jim Colby when he was congressman. He oftentimes had his own parties. And actually, somebody commented to me last night, and I thought this was a great sign. This person went to the McSally reception. He said there was, you know, roughly 100 or so people there, and he recognized three people. Now, whether Martha wins or loses the election, and right now, you know, it is neck and neck, I think that speaks very, very well of her, because she has brought already, in a very short period of time that she's been here in the district, she's brought a whole new cadre of people, much the way Jesse Kelly did when he was running, but a whole new group of people who are supporting her financially, supporting her with boots on the ground. And I think that's probably something that speaks well for Martha. I think she's going to win this election. I grant you there's a lot of provisionals and others that need to be counted, and that's maybe something we want to discuss here briefly, but she is going to be a force to be reckoned with. She really is very much in the same mold as Gabby Giffords, and I think she has the ability to govern on that basis where she's going to have broad appeal to both sides.
Here's Mark Evans, Bruce Ash.
How important do you think the independents were in that CD2 race? You know, it's a pretty even in terms of its registration between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans have like a 1-point lead, but then independents are right there. And in the early balloting, you saw Barber have a pretty good lead, but then McSally, as the election day votes were coming in, was picking it up, you know, bit by bit until she finally caught him there at the end. Still with a lot of ballots still to count. And that indicates to me maybe that was a lot of independents that were, because they don't tend to vote early, breaking for her. Do you see it that way, or do you think I'm off there?
No, you may be right on. Martha McSally got really kind of a later start, you know, being that she came in as a complete newcomer. It took her a little while to get her legs underneath her. Probably what we have seen is Martha's had good overall appeal with Democrats as well as independents, because she might be just as conservative as some of the other Republican candidates who ran in CD8 and now in CD2. She doesn't sound as threatening. And that really, you know, as we're looking at sort of a national dynamic for the Republican Party, I think it's standing up for conservative principles, but not sort of being blustery and having a message that isn't well received by independents and, you know, by people who consider themselves moderates. I think the people who are independents and the people who are moderates, there's a certain number of them who are liberal, who kind of don't like using that word anymore, and a certain number of them who are conservatives who don't like using that word anymore.
Speaking of blustery, I wanted to bring up the defeat of Frank Antonori. As soon as I said blustery, everyone knew where I was going with that one. But David Bradley won the Senate seat in that district. And what does that say about not only Frank Antonori as a candidate himself and how he's conducted himself in the legislature? But he didn't get any national money. He had people actively working against him in the Republican Party. And also just that whole sort of demeanor of, you're going to do what I say, and if you don't like what I say, it's just because you can't handle it.
Yeah. Well, good question. Frank was defeated pretty soundly yesterday. Tone might have had something to do with it. The loser, though, is Pima County. And Tucson, because David Gelding is a gelding, or David Bradley is a gelding in the future legislative session. He's going to be able to do nothing unless he caucuses with the Republicans. And David has not exactly proven himself to be somebody who is willing to caucus on the other side. Pima County needed Frank Antonori's presence in the Arizona State Legislature. They needed a Republican. Now, very likely, they're going to have absolutely no Republicans whatsoever representing the South and the East sides of Tucson, Arizona. That, to me, is a problem. With respect to support from President Pierce and some of the other groups, President Pierce is going to pay for what he did in this election. And I think they're having their leadership elections today, probably as we're speaking.
That sounds sort of ominous.
Well, because the members are going to take what he did, taking money that was supposed to go for electing Republicans who had supported a Republican agenda, and then the president deciding that he wanted certain people elected who would support him for reelection. I don't believe that Steve Pierce will be reelected as Senate president, and my guess is that Doug Ducey has overtaken President Pierce in a 2014 gubernatorial favorite role, because Doug actually worked within the party and outside the party to work on this 204 ballot measure.
If things are that confrontational within the Republican Party, how can there be any hope of reaching out across the aisle toward Democrats? I mean, if it's that, you know, my way or the highway, and I understand internal party politics and all of that, but what does that bode? How does that bode well for the future of the state legislature with that sort of strife going on?
Well, this is stuff that's gone on between Republicans and their caucus and Democrats within their caucus for a long time. It's nothing unusual. This is politics and the sharp elbows of doing business in close quarters. The Republicans and Democrats have repeatedly crossed party lines and the aisle to work together with one another. There are certain things that Republicans are going to be more resistant on, and that is raising taxes, and that is increasing the size of government and the spending after we finally dug ourselves out of a $3 billion ditch. On those aspects of government, I doubt that there is going to be much in the way of compromise that takes place. We've got the temporary 1% sales tax that'll go away next year. And we're going to have to not how Senator Farley talked about balancing the state budget by taxes and so on and loophole cutting, but by growing the economy. That's what Republicans, I believe, have concentrated on during this past session. Steve Farley can say all he wants that this was about, you know, big bad Republicans and pushing people around and dangerous and radical and extremists. Nothing of the sort. Republicans have tried to build the economy through growth of jobs.
Bruce Ash is with us. He is the National Committeeman for Arizona. So you're contending, Bruce Ash, that with Mr. Bradley now becoming a senator, and I believe Ted Vogt was defeated. Was that correct?
He was,
Representative,
yes.
Vogt.
And that's a big, big defeat also for Pima County. Ted Vogt, on countless measures, was voting on behalf of Tucson and Pima County and trying to get things right and trying to be a conservative that spoke also in a tone that was not threatening.
Why can't county Republicans break through in the county races? This is the first time in a while where I've seen Republicans running in every single supervisor or district, and they, you know, it ends up status quo. It's still going to be a 3-2 vote. They've also tried to get in some success with the city council and haven't had success with the city council. Is it simply the registration advantage that Democrats have, or is it a message that's not selling, or is it strategy? And my question about strategy is, I thought since District 3 seemed to be the supervisor district seemed to be the ball game in terms of flipping the board, why not put all your effort into knocking off Sharon Bronson rather than run this broad-based five-race campaign?
Yeah. Well, I want to give credit to Jeff Rogers, because I think while he has been a county Democrat chairman, he's done a very good job with strategy and rallying the force. Certainly having the state party chairman who also lives here in Tucson is a good thing. It helps focus everybody's attention. There was a great deal of effort made by the candidate and also by an independent expenditure committee in the D3 race. In the end, it just wasn't enough. And it wasn't enough in the sheriff's race either. I really thought that Clarence Dubnyk was going to get a run for his money, and he did.
He did, yeah.
But Mark unfortunately fell short in that effort. So, you know, certainly there are some registration numbers to contend with, but also I think the Democrats have run a very good operation, and we've got a bunch of our Republicans who are running around beating on their chests, you know, talking about their conservative creds and not doing enough to help our Republican candidates.
Did Mark Naper win a bunch of fans? If he wants another chance at running for another office, I think it's pretty safe to say that most of the Republicans were pretty impressed with him. He ran a pretty good campaign.
Yeah, he sure did. He kept it positive.
Right.
You know, he allowed surrogates and spokesmen to,
right,
you know, to kind of do some of his work for him. But Mark ran very, very hard. He made a lot of friends in this election. Actually, I think he made a lot of Democrat and independent friends as well because of his tone and the way that he conducted himself. I liked Mark from the second I met him, and I think he's a good man. We'll see more from him, I hope.
Yeah, he ran a very clever classy campaign. Quickly, just a quick on provisional ballots, the huge number out there.
Yeah, there was a serious problem at the recorder's office, and FN can sort of obfuscate all she wants. She sat in the studio yesterday with John C. Scott and said how wonderful a job it had been done and that this was all the voters' problem. Richard was on the show earlier. I heard him saying this was the voters' fault. There were some serious problems with documentation that must be cleared up in the next election. We voted in these same precincts in the primary election. We didn't have problems like this. This was a post-primary problem that came up. And when I saw Benny White, who is our elections integrity person, yesterday afternoon, Benny doesn't get nervous about too many things. He was very, very nervous about what he saw happening as a breakdown in the voter master
rolls. What do you do now?
We got to go. What do we do now?
To keep an eye on that, to see how those provisionals go through and they all get counted and they don't get mucked.
Well, I think we're probably going to see some legal people circling the dead body here, but we need to count the votes.
All right. Bruce Ash, thanks for being with us. Sarah Garrett-Gasson, thank you.
Thank you.
And Mark Evans, thanks a lot. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show, provided by our friends at Culligan. What is it about Culligan? Well, Culligan water, it simply tastes better. John C. Scott will talk more about the election from 4 to 5 this afternoon. Then tomorrow, it's 6 to 8 with Wake Up Tucson and Chris and Joe. I am Bill Buckmaster. Thanks for being with us. Have a great afternoon.
This is Michael Medved. Stay tuned for more Intelligent Talk on AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice.